This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yeis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
a UN report warns poverty, deprivation, and government abuse of power are driving young Africans to join violent extremist groups such as Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and Islamic State.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, Lesotho's military commander is shot dead. The United States has imposed sanctions on three top South Sudanese officials, and the Egyptian government is being accused of widespread and systematic torture of political detainees.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story, Cameroon's government has ordered the reopening of dozens of schools in the north that were deserted following attacks by Boko Haram, but turnout has been low and continued security concerns. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the far north region of Cameroon.
It was quiet Thursday morning at the government primary school in Tiriwa, a village 13 kilometers from Fotokol, a town on the Cameroon-Nigeria border. The government ordered the school reopened this week, but no one has shown up for class. The school was closed after Boko Haram fighters attacked the village in April 2015. The assailants shot and burned to death about 30 civilians and wounded another 50. The surviving villagers escaped. In all, the Boko Haram insurgency has displaced about 200,000 people in northern Cameroon since the attacks first spread from Nigeria in 2014. Recently, Cameroon's government has been urging IDPs to return home to farm, and the government has reopened at least 40 schools in the far north region. Aminu Sanda Zua is the government delegate in charge of elementary education in the region. He says 124 schools were closed last year, and the suicide bombings have made them reluctant to reopen some of the establishments. But he says their ultimate goal is to open all the closed schools. Nigerian and regional troops have taken back most of the territory that Boko Haram once controlled, but the terrorists have remained a threat. Amnesty International says since April, civilian casualties have climbed amid a spike in suicide bombings, with at least 381 people killed in northeastern Nigeria and far north Cameroon. Many teachers still fear for their lives and have not returned to service, according to Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon.
Ceux qui ont abandonné l'école et les classes pour des faits de Boko Haram, ils se chiffrent à près de 400.
He says the over 400 teachers who have abandoned schools because of the Boko Haram insurgency have turned down calls to return. He says those teachers will be called to the disciplinary council of Cameroon's civil service. He says local authorities have drawn up a strategy with the military and self-defense groups to help people who fled to return to their villages. He says the military has also been teaching children in schools in some villages prone to Boko Haram attacks. The governor said education is a fundamental human right, and that is why they have made reopening the schools a priority. At the government high school in the border town of Fotokol, about 900 of the expected 1,700 students returned to class this week. The high school students told VOA they are happy to be back in class, but that they are also scared. Some spoke of their friends who were killed or wounded when Boko Haram attacked the school 2 years ago. Lamin Buba, one of the teachers, says they have increased security measures.
Nous avons un cordon de sécurité où
He says all school children have to be searched systematically before being given access to the institution. He says they are felling all trees in the forest near their school to stop potential suicide bombers from hiding there and to increase visibility. The government insists that the decision to reopen schools is not premature. Officials say Boko Haram has not carried out mass raids in the area since May and that adequate measures have been taken to check suicide bombings. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Kolofata, Cameroon.
It's the end of an era for Liberia as President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf prepares to step down after nearly 12 years in power. 20 candidates are campaigning to take the top spot in the country, and a recent poll found that half of Liberian voters remain undecided. For more insight on the issues concerning Liberians, I spoke with our colleague James Butte, who is in Monrovia. He first described the mood on the ground ahead of October 10th elections.
The country is, what I would say, under an election fever, particularly here in the capital, despite the periodic rain, because this is the rainy season here. Everywhere you turn, especially along the main boulevards here, you see campaign posters, the billboards, some of them big and small, of the many presidential candidates. I think about 20 or so presidential candidates are here, also contributing to the what I would say electrifying mood here is the fact that the candidates, especially the top six candidates, are officially launching their campaign in the capital. This Saturday, Charles Bramskin, who is the presidential candidate for the Liberty Party, will officially launch his campaign here in Monrovia. And we, VOA, has made arrangement to speak with Mr. Bramskin later this afternoon. Our listeners can hear more of that on the Daybreak Africa Friday program.
With so many candidates, what are going to be the top issues that the people want addressed?
The main issue, I would say, is the issue of the economy. So whoever is going to be elected on October 10th as president, the issue of the economy is going to be prominent. The people here would like for that person to address their economic situation. For example, the issue of youth unemployment. On Wednesday evening, I paid a visit to a place called Red Light. That's a general market, the largest, I would say, in Monrovia. And I had a chance to talk to the different marketeers there who are selling different wares. And these people, most of them women, trying to meet the daily needs of their families, were telling me that they were having difficulty just trying to make ends meet. Some of them said their children are out of school because the tuition is too expensive and they cannot afford it. They would like for their children to have jobs so that it can help deal with the livelihood of their family. The issue also of infrastructure development should be important here. The issue of public transport. As you navigate this city, you find that there is a big need of public transport here. There are many, many issues on the minds of the voters, and the hope is that whoever is elected, that person should be able to address these issues.
Is there any particular candidate who stands out right now in terms of being able to address the economic issues?
According to the recent survey, there are six candidates that are considered the top candidates. The current Vice President, Joseph Boakai, George Weah, the senator, I mentioned Charles Bramskin, Mr. Alexander Cummings, the businessman Benonai Ure, and the former Central Bank Governor, Mills Jones. As to who the Liberian people see as their choice, when you ask people their different viewpoints in terms of who they support. So October 10 will be the final decision where Liberians will know who is the person that will be chosen to be the next president of Liberia.
That was our colleague James Butte in Monrovia, Liberia.
Lesotho's military commander was shot dead this week in a gunfight with two rival officers, both of whom were also killed. The Associated Press says Lieutenant General Kouanli Motsomotso died Tuesday. Lesotho has been plagued by military interference in politics and power struggles. Southern African Development Community countries, including South Africa, Angola, and Mozambique, are sending troops to Lesotho, but no word of how many are being deployed to help keep the peace.
A prominent opposition leader in Tanzania has been shot multiple times. The Associated Press reports Tundu Lissu was seriously wounded near his home in the capital. He was wounded in the stomach, leg, and arm. Lissu is a member of the Chadema Party and recently faced criminal charges for calling President John Magufuli a dictator. Police are searching for multiple gunmen who opened fire from the car they were in. Lissu was being driven home from Parliament at the time.
A UN report warns poverty, deprivation, and government abuse of power are driving young Africans to join violent extremist groups such as Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, and Islamic State. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on a study by the UN Development Program that explores the reasons behind this attraction to organizations that engage in terrorist activities.
This two-year, first-of-a-kind study is based on interviews with 495 voluntary recruits to extremist organizations. It sheds light on the recruitment process, misperceptions, growing dangers, and possible actions for change. The report finds the road to extremism in Africa is paved with deprivation, poverty, underdevelopment, and marginalization. The UN Development Fund warns Africa's vulnerability to violent extremism is deepening. It notes half of the continent's population lives below the poverty line, and many of its young people are chronically underemployed. Lead author of the report, UNDP Africa Regional Program Coordinator Mohamed Yahya, tells VOA solutions other than those dealing with security measures must be found to address this problem.
Security actors obviously have an important role to play, but security becomes important only when these groups, these people who have joined these groups, have acted or have engaged in terrorist acts or violent extremist acts, I should say, and in many cases late because they've already joined. So what is it that can be done before they join?
Participants in the study indicate frustration about their economic condition plays a larger role in their decision to join an extremist group than do religious ideologies. The study finds recruitment in Africa takes place mostly at the local level, face-to-face, rather than online, as is the case in other regions. UNDP's Yayo warns the recruitment of young Africans by terrorist organizations is likely to escalate when internet penetration comes to the continent. He says young people must be given better socioeconomic alternatives to prevent this from happening. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Human Rights Watch accused the Egyptian government of widespread and systematic torture of political detainees. The organization said in a new report that torture in Egypt amounts to a crime against humanity and that it can be prosecuted in any country according to international law. The Egyptian government denies the report's allegations. It accuses Human Rights Watch of instigating trouble. It says the group is known for its political agenda and bias. Joe Stork is Deputy Middle East Director at Human Rights Watch. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shanawi about the report.
We were able to directly interview, talk with 19 former detainees and the family of a 20th detainee who told us very consistent stories about what they endured when they were in detention and under interrogation by Egyptian security forces. That, coupled with the reports that Egyptian human rights groups have provided and other accounts, the fact that this is something, a problem we've been documenting in Egypt since 1992, a very, very long time, certainly seems to be systematic. It certainly appears to be widespread. The fact that the detainees had complained about their torture to prosecutors who did nothing to investigate, in almost all cases, did nothing to investigate the complaints, and in fact, in some cases, allegedly sent the detainee back for more torture. This couldn't be happening without the knowledge and at least tacit approval of the top authorities, the Minister of Interior and President el-Sisi.
But Egyptian government officials at the highest level continue to deny the seriousness of the torture epidemic. And when asked about torture in Egypt, they have said that torture does not take place in prisons and that the Constitution prohibits torture.
Well, yes, the Constitution does prohibit torture, but it's certainly happening in prisons, or certainly what we documented was not in prisons, but in detention. So before people are convicted and sent to prison, when they're under interrogation. Yes, the Egyptian authorities have said this for many, many years, and it's quite clearly wrong. I mean, that's why we did this report, was to determine whether this was correct or not. When you have the same consistent accounts of what people endured under interrogation from person after person, and consistent also with the accounts that other Egyptian organizations have come up with, it's very clear that the Egyptian authorities either don't know what they're talking about or simply lying.
Against that backdrop, what did the Human Rights Watch recommend for Egyptian President el-Sisi to do in order to deal with what your report described as epidemic torture in the country?
Yeah, well, we said President el-Sisi should make clear that his administration has a zero tolerance for any kind of torture, should publicly instruct the Interior Minister to issue clear instructions to all his forces that this is the case, and to instruct the Prosecutor General to set up an independent investigation into the allegations and prosecute those officers, those security officers found to be responsible for torture.
What does HRW intend to do, given the fact that under international law, torture is a crime of universal jurisdiction?
We've urged all UN member states to act on the fact that torture is a crime of universal jurisdiction, which means if any people credibly accused of participating in acts of torture or condoning acts of torture, these people should be arrested and prosecuted if and when they fall under the jurisdiction of the member state. For instance, if they visit or relocate to a member state, they should be prosecuted.
That was Joe Stork, Deputy Middle East Director at Human Rights Watch, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 23 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Cameroon's government has ordered the reopening of dozens of schools in the north that were deserted following attacks by Boko Haram. Lesotho's military commander is shot dead. And a UN report warns poverty, deprivation, and government abuse of power are driving young Africans to join violent extremist groups. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A new report says corruption, collusion, and lack of law enforcement are seriously undermining several efforts to crack down on the illegal ivory trade in Central Africa. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Wildlife Trade Monitoring Network, TRAFFIC, calls its new report the first comprehensive assessment of ivory trade in the region in nearly two decades. Its investigators posed as buyers and visited major cities in five countries. Sone Nkoke is the main author of the report and is based in Yaoundé, Cameroon. He says if the current pace of poaching and ivory trade continues, elephants may disappear from Central Africa within a couple of decades.
I must say it is quite big. Ivory is one of the most traded wildlife commodities in Central Africa. If our elephant populations are plummeting, it means that it is quite huge.
Nkoke says sellers of illegal ivory are not as easily spotted as they used to be.
One of the main findings is that the trade has actually gone underground. You wouldn't see ivory pieces exposed like before. And the main problems is corruption and governance issues and the high demand in Asia. That demand is pushing the poaching level quite high and the trafficking level quite up, coupled with lack of effective enforcement.
Current laws ban domestic ivory trade in Central African Republic, Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Gabon, but not in Cameroon. The traffic report says there is a loose and ambiguous interpretation of the law in all countries, not only by the authorities in charge of enforcement, but also by many other actors.
There are laws. Government agencies do carry out regular arrests. But if you take the quantity that is leaving the sub-region, it shows that between 2007 and 2015, more than 53,000 kilograms of ivory coming from Central Africa were seized, which represents almost 6,000 elephants. So if that quantity of ivory can leave despite the laws, it means there's a problem.
Nkoke says organized criminal networks are behind the ivory trade, with members in Africa and Asia. China is the biggest market for ivory. It has promised to impose a near-total ban on the trade this year. But Hong Kong officials said recently it may take them until the year 2021 to enact a total ban. In the meantime, ivory traders have demanded the Hong Kong government compensate them for any ivory it seizes. Traffic is calling for tougher law enforcement and closer cooperation among police and customs agencies in African and Asian countries. It says Central African states have pledged commitments to stop elephant poaching and illegal ivory trade under the international treaty known as CITES, the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com.
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.